Welcome back to the Physician Syndicate podcast. I am one of your hosts, Greg.
And I'm your other host, Ronak.
This morning, doing a daily podcast is a difficult thing, right? Where you have to figure out what are the topics that you're going to talk about? What are the things that you're going to bring up on the podcast? So we're trying to do Monday through Friday. We'll see if we're actually able to do that in a sustainable fashion. But today, when I was on LinkedIn, it really came across my newsfeed. And I was like, that's what we're going to talk about. So today we're going to talk about a pretty large funding round for a quote unquote seed round, which it's not a seed round. This is an abnormally sized round that typically you wouldn't have seen other than like 2021. So a company is coming out of stealth and they're creating what they're calling the first dedicated healthcare large language model to basically go and replace a lot of the communication that healthcare workers are doing with patients, from nutritionists to dietitians to physicians, nurses, NPs, PAs. It looks like it was incubated within General Catalyst. And so the company that's coming out of stealth is called Hippocratic AI. And their CEO, Munjal Shah, he has done a lot of different startups throughout his time. And it looks like he must have been within General Catalyst, maybe in an entrepreneur in residence kind of role. But yeah, they came out of stealth today. The company was founded in January 2023, so just a few months ago, really on the riding the tailwinds a little bit of ChatGPT. And I'm pretty sure what they said was basically, how the hell can we capitalize on these new large language models specifically within healthcare? And so this new seed round is led by General Catalyst as well as Andreessen Horowitz. They announced a $50 million seed round, which is a healthy sized round of capital. I think the team right now is made up of the CEO as well as six other co-founders, and it sounds like they're coming from different fields, from data science to medicine, etc. Again, we've talked about AI a lot in this show. This is just another one of these companies that's coming through that is very well capitalized. What are your thoughts? I have a few questions. I'm hoping that we can get somebody on from the team to come talk about this, or one of the investors that invested. The people that were leading the investments were Julie Yu, who's at Andreessen Horowitz, as well as Hemant Tanaj, who's at General Catalyst.
Yeah, so there's a whole bunch of thoughts here, Greg. So first of all, you said that this is a $50 million seed round. So what does a seed round mean? If you think about a tree, you're growing a giant oak tree or something like that, right? It starts off as this little tiny seed that needs to be planted, needs to be watered, and eventually over time, it grows into this gigantic tree. Same thing with a lot of these companies in the venture capital industry, right? Sometimes a company needs a little bit of capital just to get going, put together their initial product, hire the initial people, and just push on those initial sales. And that in that first or second round of funding is typically called the seed round. Sometimes these come from like friends and family. Sometimes it comes from venture capital institutions. It can come from different places, but generally it's done before real product market fit is established and before you're really hyperscaling the company. It is typically a little bit more on the risky side. And I think it's very unusual to see a seed round being at the level of $50 million. We've talked about on this podcast before that if somebody is interested in starting their own company, you can bootstrap a lot of things. You don't need to spend a ton of money to get going. So the fact that this company was able to put together $50 million in a seed round is very impressive. And I think, Greg, you're right that this is probably an entrepreneur in residence type situation where, you know, General Catalyst or a couple of these venture capital firms probably got together and was like, you know what, there's an opportunity in XYZ space. We have the entrepreneurs. Why don't we start putting together a company, as opposed to a company going to a venture capital firm and saying, hey, we've already started, and do you want to back us for a little bit of equity? A lot of times, companies are actually born within venture capital firms themselves, and they just have entrepreneurs that are sitting around waiting for the right idea to be placed on top of a startup that the venture capital firm is creating. These are usually bigger name people that have very specific and fantastic industry experience. So that's probably what's going on here. Another thought here is that I think the startup world moves very fast. If we would have rewound the clock 3 months ago, it would have seemed that ChatGPT is completely taking over the AI space, and that's going to be the clear winner. As consumers, it's hard to know who's going to win 15, 20 years from now, right? There's all these different ideas that are popping up, all these different products and services that are trying to one-up each other. And this company, it seems like they're going specifically after the healthcare industry, which also we've talked a lot about on this podcast, that all this AI stuff that's going on, this is cool and it's easy for people to ignore, especially in the healthcare world. They're just so focused on dealing with patients and sticking with your Epic EMR systems and not really wanting to delve into the technical side of things and think about where things are going to be 5 years from now. But I think this goes to show that the healthcare industry can move really quickly also. And who ends up winning is a mystery. We're in a very great position as consumers where there is a lot of money being thrown into the AI space right now. And that just means that there's going to be different companies that are competing for supremacy, where they're going to have to one-up each other. And the products and services that we ultimately get to play with are going to be more and more robust. So I actually look at this as a really positive for the industry. $50 million is huge. And it wouldn't shock me if, like, next month we see some other company, let's say Sequoia Capital that we've been talking about on this podcast before, maybe they're incubating another healthcare LM and they're going to throw $60 million at it. And by competing with each other, ultimately, these products and services just get so good, so amazing, and we all benefit.
Yeah, and I think one of the other things that I really want to talk about is General Catalyst. So General Catalyst has done a really interesting thing over the last couple of years. They've really focused on working in the healthcare space, and they've done something very interesting in terms of one of the things we've also talked about a lot is distribution. They're helping to solve the distribution problem for their startups. So General Catalyst has something called Health Assurance, and they formulated this with a couple of their partners within the health division, but then they also brought on some kind of special partners or advisors, whatever you want to call them. One of those being my old CEO at my hospital system at Jefferson, Stephen Klasko. So he was the past CEO of Jefferson Health, which is a relatively big system here in Philadelphia. So it rivals UPenn. And they brought him on as, I don't know what exactly the term is, venture partner, special partner, whatever it is, to really help formulate the thought process behind how do they get their startups, their portfolio companies into health systems, which is notoriously difficult, right? That is the big issue. If you have an amazing technology, it's 10x anything that's out on the market, it doesn't matter unless people are actually using it within the health system. And so that's what they're trying to solve. And last year in November, so November 15th, 2022, they announced 15 different health system strategic partners for their companies to basically get pilots with pretty easily. And there are some big names. One of them, HCA Healthcare. I think it's the largest for-profit healthcare system in the US, Jefferson Health. Intermountain Healthcare, another gigantic one. Wellspan Health. They also have the UK represented. So they have Guy's and St. Thomas NHS Foundation, Cincinnati Children's, UC Davis, UC Irvine, Health First, Metro Health, Medical University of South Carolina, Hackensack Meridian, Banner Health, Health Services, and Ohio Health. That is crazy. If I'm a digital health company and I know that my number one problem is going to be distribution, I am damn well sure I'm going to reach out to every partner that I possibly can at General Catalyst, knowing that their focus is on how do I get your solution distributed to these people so then you can at least test out your product and bring it to market with a lot more momentum than if you go with a general venture capital fund. So anyways, General Catalyst, I feel, is like destroying everybody else in terms of strategy of how do you build generational defining healthcare companies. And they're doing it in a very intelligent way by partnering with systems, bringing on ex-CEOs of hospital systems. Like, it's exactly what we've talked about on this podcast as being the most difficult thing. So they're like the kingmaker, right? You go and get money from General Catalyst, they're going to help you scale.
Yeah. So Greg, I think this really comes back to the idea that all money is not equal, depending on who you raise money from. Can make a big difference. And I think if you can raise money from a couple angel investors that can put you in touch with warm connections to some of these superpower VCs for a Series A, that's fundamentally different than raising money from friends and family that they can write you a check, but that's about it, right? Who you actually partner with is very important. We've talked about in this podcast before, these giant companies like everything from Apple to Microsoft to Johnson & Johnson to Pfizer, they have such big scale, whether it's their manufacturing operations or their distribution networks or whatever it is, that it's very difficult for startups to compete with them. But if you're able to raise money from the right angel investors to ultimately get in front of the right venture capital firms, all of a sudden your products and services, you can develop all of those partnerships so that way you can scale and you can grow and you actually have an opportunity to compete with these giant companies. So I think being very careful about who you partner with and thinking that through is really important for anybody that's thinking about starting a company or already has, especially with the healthcare industry, because there is so much regulatory resistance. There is people's lives at stake with a lot of these products and services that are being put together. So I think hospitals tend to be a little bit conservative with trying out new things. And if you have the right backers that have the right partnerships in place, it's going to be far more simple and streamlined to get into a lot of these hospitals.
And the other interesting thing that I would like to bring up is also, so General Catalyst likely incubated the company, right? Which means they probably have a little bit of a different equity model than they do in terms of just if it's a random outside of the firm company coming to look for an equity financing. But the interesting thing is they brought another venture capital firm into the fold for this seed round. This is A16Z, and they have their own bio and health fund that I think has raised like over $1 billion in their last fund. They're not bringing on people that don't know what they're doing. They're bringing thought leaders on from the venture capital world that have helped scale a lot of other big healthcare companies. And the other thing that I would like to go over, since this is a physician-focused kind of angel investing startup world podcast, is what do you think they raised at? What do you think their valuation was? So they're raising $50 million at a seed round. If you're taking between 20, 25, 30% in equity from that $50 million, what do you think the valuation was, Ronak?
So my personal guess, I don't know if you have the answer or not in front of you. This is just my take on how companies that are formed through entrepreneur in residence situations might work. Instead of going to a company and saying, hey, I want to raise $50 million, I'm going to give you 30% of my company. It actually works the other way around, right? That 100% of the company is going to be owned by, let's say, General Catalyst and A16Z. And then they go to the entrepreneur and say, hey, we're going to give you 10% of the company to step in to be the CEO and get it off the ground. So I actually think that the valuation might be relatively low and maybe guessing that it's something around $75 million, where $50 million is being put into the company and the CEO and the employee compensation pool is created just a little bit to extend beyond the $50 million that's put into the company. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's something in the ballpark of $75 million.
Yeah, I think you might be right in terms of like how it's structured. If this was a typical startup, again, that's coming from an external source and they're raising capital from General Catalyst and A16Z, that would put their valuation in like the above $200 million range, likely. But I think you're right. It might be a little bit different given that this sounds like it was an incubation. There's probably a different deal set up for something like that. And yeah, you're probably right. General Catalyst probably owns quite a bit if they actually did incubate the company, and they're probably just bringing A16Z on as another value add investor. This is a gigantic round though. $50 million is bigger than most Series A's, even in 2021. Like that is a gigantic amount of funding. They must have a gigantic hiring plan right now.
Yeah, Greg, I think there's two things here. So one, if you are a very well-known physician has fantastic experience, all the right connections, and you're thinking about starting your own company, going through an incubator program like an entrepreneurship in residence at a brand name venture capital firm is very interesting, right? You get the backing right away, right? Like a $50 million backing. So the odds that you can create a successful company is going to be much higher than starting a company yourself and then going and knocking on venture capital doors. But on the other side, the amount of equity that you get to keep and start off with is probably a lot lower. So it is an interesting idea for some brand name doctors out there to think about, right? I don't know, hypothetically, if Anthony Fauci wanted to go and do his own startup tomorrow, right? I think it probably makes a lot more sense for him to go through a program like this than go starting from scratch and then going on knocking on venture capital's doors. On the other hand, if you are looking for more just high risk, high reward, just roll the dice on life, I would say, why go through an entrepreneurship in residence program, right? Start off owning 100% of your company and give up as little of it as you can, and then try just building out something absolutely massive. Like, why reduce your risk that way? So I think that it is an interesting like sliding scale and like how that structure could end up looking like. And I think you're right, Greg, also that a lot of Series A investments are smaller than this seed round. And I think this actually gets into a little bit of semantics, that there is no absolutely formal definition for what a pre-seed round means, or a seed round, or a Series A, or a Series B. They're all just make-believe. They're like trying to somewhat categorize what stage the company is at for these investments, but there's no hard and fast rules about this stuff. I think General Catalyst and A16Z probably just have a lot of faith in who they've selected as the CEO, and probably just have a very detailed thesis on, this is going to be an area that's going to grow. Let's go try dominating this and leveraging as much of our resources as we can.
Yeah, the other interesting thing that, so I'll link the Forbes article into the show notes just so other people can see what I'm looking at here, but they have a chart that compares ChatGPT-4 versus Hippocratic AI's AI model, which my big question is, it a proprietary LLM that they've built, or is it on top of ChatGPT-4 that's just had additional training within kind of healthcare data specifically? Because it does a little bit better, just a little bit better than ChatGPT-4 in a lot of these different kind of exams that they had it run through. So specifically, they had it run through the U.S. medical licensing exam, which is USMLE. Not sure if it was USMLE 1, 2, or 3, or all of them. But basically, it slightly outperforms ChatGPT-4. So again, I don't even know what they're measuring here, but it says 89.9 versus 89.5. I don't know if that's like raw number of correct questions. Like, that's not an actual score from a USMLE exam. So I don't know exactly what they're trying to compare. And then they also had it run on NCLEX, which is the registered nursing exam. It outperformed, again, ChatGPT-4 pretty significantly, 88.6 compared to 76.2. And then it ran through like a bunch of other exams and test kind of scenarios, because they're basically saying, we can take a general LLM and do these things, but if you have a healthcare specific one, you can really fine tune it and make it that much better. And their goal with Hippocratic AI, according to a lot of the things that I've read, is basically to have a large language model that can replace and do some of the tasks that just simply don't need to be done by a person, if you can have a computer or a AI do these things in a empathetic and compassionate fashion, which is something we talked about with that study that came out, right, with the Reddit forum. But that's their goal. The question, though, is, did they build off of ChatGPT-4, or are they building their own proprietary LLM, which I think gives them, it would be more interesting, I feel like, if it's an actual LLM that they're building from scratch, but I don't know how hard that is to do from scratch within just a couple months.
So a couple of things here, Greg. So we've talked in the past about reinforcement learning. So just the fact that this company has outputs that are a little bit better than ChatGPT, this little bit can compound into quite a bit over time. And if in the long range, there's only going to be a couple of LLMs in the healthcare industry that ultimately win out, that 0.5% this way versus that way can actually be a huge amount. It doesn't feel like a lot today, but as the reinforcement learning compounds over time, that could be the difference between winning and losing. So I don't want to discount the little bit better that it is than ChatGPT. Second thing is, I think the magic between a lot of these LLMs is like the data that it's running over. So I don't know if this company has access to some proprietary data, especially with all of the other General Catalyst and A16Z companies, and maybe they're running over some of the other startups' data that's out there that's proprietary to this company that ChatGPT can't access. If so, that would be huge. I would also think that if you're
that's definitely something that we need to talk about, right?
Yeah.
Is where are they getting the data to train a healthcare specific LLM? Because again, we've talked about it in the past, but if you're a hospital system, you have the training data. Like, you have to realize that your Epic or Cerner or whatever it is, the instance that you have, that data is a treasure trove, and it's going to build gigantic companies. And I don't, like, I guarantee you they're getting most of their data from the General Catalyst partnerships that they have in place, right, and are saying, hey, we're going to have some kind of data sharing agreement. But right, for every other hospital system out there, you have a gold mine.
Yeah.
When you think about how much data is stored within the actual medical record, it's absolutely insane. Just knowing how many times and how many things you have to input into it, the labs, the radiology studies, like all of that information is exactly what these companies want to train their LLMs on. It's, if there is not a marketplace for healthcare data yet, there needs to be, because that would be a gigantic company in and of itself, knowing that LLMs are going to take over medicine. It's just a question of how do you get, like you said, proprietary data sets that nobody else can get. And I guarantee you that General Catalyst has talked to all of those health partners about getting their data exclusively, is my guess.
So Greg, you mentioned that the CEO of Jefferson has somehow played a role in all of this, right? So maybe that CEO of Jefferson Hospital was able to put together a deal where the Jefferson data is proprietary to this company. If you're able to string together a bunch of hospitals with proprietary contracts like this, all of a sudden a $50 million investment makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that becomes a moat. And yeah, he was the CEO of Jefferson. He left last year, but he
knew somebody like that is going to have all the
left.
Somebody like that is going to have all the contacts and being able to orchestrate a deal like this. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the other thing that I would say is, again, $50 million is a lot of money, right? You can hire a lot of engineers for that. So it wouldn't surprise me if they probably are creating their own models and just piggybacking off of ChatGPT, just so that way they can have their own independence. They're not held hostage to some other company. But I don't think the differentiator here is really going to be the LLM model itself. It's going to be the underlying data that it's running off of.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm also just going to the CEO's LinkedIn really quick just to see what his highlights are. So it looks like co-founder and CEO of a company, Andali, acquired by Vendio and then Alibaba. Cool. CEO and co-founder of Like.com. This is August 2004 through August 2010. Computer vision and machine learning AI startup for e-commerce acquired by Google. Good. Director of product management at Google Shopping. So he was there for a little over a year and then went over to, looks like he took a year off between October of 2011 to October of 2012. And then he became an EIR, so entrepreneur in residence at Charles River Ventures for about a year. And I guess that's probably where he co-founded a new company, Health IQ, which I think it is actually a 16Z portfolio company. And it says that he was there from January 2013 through January 2023. So he left to start Hippocratic AI. So I'm not sure what's going on with Health IQ. I've never heard of that company, but maybe we'll do a little research on that. And now he's started Hippocratic AI January of 2023, again, with the $50 million seed round from A16Z and General Catalyst. And it says founded by hospital administrators, doctors, Medicare experts, and researchers. There you go. I guess the last thing that we'll mention is one of these articles, again, I'll put all of these into the show notes, mentions that they are doing kind of that model of creating the LLM. They're going to be watching it and making sure that it's running up to snuff before they actually expose any real live patients to it. And the other thing they'll be doing is actually working with healthcare workers, whether that's actual registered dietitians, nutritionists, physicians, PAs, NPs, RNs, to actually help train the large language model to make sure that it's not just giving you the right answer, but it's giving you the right answer in the right way, which is really interesting because they're not just going to be like, hey, let's just go throw it out into the world and see how it performs. You can't really do that in healthcare very much. It's not really a go fast and break things kind of world. It's much more, a little bit slower, a little bit more deliberate, especially when you have real patients' lives in your hand, which again, like you're building an AI model to interact with actual patients, right? This is not theoretical anymore. It's actually practical. So you need to think through how do you actually do that in a appropriate, a moral, an ethical way, knowing that you could have some outlier events from some of these things that happen. And I think they're, at least according to what they're saying now, they're going to take their time and make sure that they limit how many of those things happen in the future by slowly expanding this out. And it sounds like their business model is also going to be basically working with healthcare systems to create these kind of chatbots for each of these departments, and they will basically allow people to start using it once it reaches a certain threshold. And again, they go in to say, basically, we're not going to have like medical decision making. And then one of the articles says not yet, which is interesting. And so they're really focusing on an AI within healthcare that has bedside manner is what they're saying. Yeah. So it sounds like they're at least taking a very cautious approach to this and not being like, we're just going to get this out to everybody and see what happens. There are a lot of players in the space, though. Again, we've talked about Epic getting into the AI game using ChatGPT-4. Again, Epic's going to have a gigantic corpus of data. I think you're going to see also these like data wars start, right? So Epic has access to 35% of hospital data across the US. Even with General Catalyst and how many partnerships they've created, they're not going to have 35% of the healthcare data from those 15 partners. So I still give the edge to an Epic or to a Nuance or somebody else that's already well situated throughout the entire country. Because again, you're going to see, I think, a lot of large incumbents moving very quickly to get some of these things out there also, like physician co-pilots, this one with the chat bots, basically. It's a really interesting time, though. Like, this is going to be fun to watch and figure out. We're seeing all of the companies being born now, and we're seeing the incumbents create their products. And it's going to take 5, 10, 15 years to figure out who ultimately wins in this situation. And we're just at the beginning. Like, this is literally just the beginning.
Right. I think this is really exciting. This reminds me of the playoffs in sports. So let's take basketball as an example, right? You have the teams that have the superstar players, that have the fantastic records that everybody thinks is going to win the championship. And sometimes out of nowhere, you have a Cinderella story that comes out of nowhere to win the championship or get really deep into it or really causes problems to the incumbent players. And that's what we're seeing here. That like maybe a company like an Epic or something like that is just going to completely dominate the space just because they're in a great position. Maybe we're going to see some startup come out of nowhere to really challenge them. But I think at the end of the day, more competition, the better for all the consumers out there of these products. So I think it's going to be really exciting to see how all this stuff plays out.
And to go over one more thing about this company, when you think about startups, you think about what is their total addressable market. This is a huge market, right? Like you have hundreds of millions of patients just within the US. You have a million physicians. You have, I don't know, a few or several million nurses that are all doing this work right now of answering patient messages, of communicating back and forth with patients. And for a lot of doctors, that extra work, there is pajama time, right? So it's their time at home on Epic or on Cerner or on any of these EMRs, finishing their in-basket messages, finishing their messages back and forth with other physicians. Like, it does have a very tangible ROI that you can think about in terms of just how much time people spend on different tasks that an AI can be plenty good at. I don't know, again, if it's going to fully help with the burnout piece of things. Like, I know they mentioned physician burnout and burnout in general in some of these articles. I'm cautiously optimistic that some of these things will help. But I think just from like the ROI standpoint of going to a healthcare system and saying your providers, your physicians, your nurses don't have to spend 10 hours a week doing patient communication. Now maybe it's down to an hour. That's a huge time savings that is pretty easy to sell to a C-suite in a hospital system that, and it'll also be interesting to kind of see how patients think about it, right? Like, we don't really talk too much about that side of things because it's a physician focused podcast. But on the other side, what do patients think about it with that Reddit study, everyone's saying that physicians are terrible at bedside manner and all that kind of stuff. I think that's BS, given that study was awfully constructed. But I think it does make sense that some of this stuff will be hopefully better for patients because, again, like, physicians get burnt out, physicians get tired. An AI model doesn't get tired unless the server goes down. Anyways, yeah, we're going to be following this company likely for the next 5 or 10 years and see what they end up doing. I would love to have the CEO of the company on, or one of the early employees, or one of the co-founders, or one of the venture capitalists. I know who you are. Back to this company. So if you guys want to come on and talk about it, I would love to. But good luck to the team at Hippocratic AI, and we'll be watching, and I'm sure a lot of other people will be too.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. As always, we'd like to remind you that the information and opinions expressed on this podcast are for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as financial or investment advice. Before making any investment decisions, we strongly recommend that you consult with your lawyer, tax professional, and financial planner. Keep in mind that investing in startups can be extremely risky, and there's a potential for loss of your entire investment. Remember to always conduct thorough research and consider your risk tolerance before making any financial decisions. Stay informed, and we look forward to having you join us on our next episode of the Physician Syndicate podcast.